Blog Talk Radio.
That, my friend, was an NBA game last night. That's what the playoffs are over. It's all about. Between the Thunder and the Rockets game and the Nets and the Bulls. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. From Talking Sports with Mike T. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
What's up, man? Late night, thanks to all those playoff games, but I guess it's the price you pay to watch awesomeness.
I agree. You can find us on Twitter at @BackSportsPage, or you can, I changed my Twitter handle yesterday, so it's now RandyBSP, so you can tweet at me at RandyBSP. You can call into the show at 760-283-0846. 760-283-0846 for 90 minutes of pumpkin sports talk action here. We have Kenny Anderson, former Nets point guard, joining us at 11:30 to help talk about some of these great playoff matches, and also Charles Curtis of NJ.com coming on at 12 p.m. to talk NFL draft and NHL postseason play as the season is finally winding down. If you're a local in the New York market, the New York Rangers are the 6th seed, and I believe the Islanders are the 7th seed, if that's correct. I have not looked that
I think Boston needs to beat Ottawa tonight to make that final, right? Are they playing Ottawa? I know my friend's an Islander fan.
We'll dive into hockey later on. You and I are sort of basketball guys, so it's like one of those things.
Someone told me it was good for the Islanders if Boston wins. I don't know why, but I'll go with them.
I agree with you. Again, go to backsportspage.com for our great features. We have some great ones coming up this week. An interview with the former WWE superstar Booker T, who's currently the general manager of WWE SmackDown. The Transformation of the Mamba, our one-on-one interview with Brian Scalabrine. That's coming up this week. And bunch of great fun things going on with Back Sports Page. Of course, you can listen to Mike T every Monday afternoon. I believe it's 12 p.m. Is it 12 or 12:30?
12.
Okay, 12 o'clock right here on Block Talk Radio in the Real Sports, in the Back Sports Page radio network. So, a lot going on. Before we jump into the big game, which I consider the big game of the day, the Bulls-Nets game, triple overtime, 142-134, Bulls beating the Nets. I really want to jump on these two blowout games. Like, I'm talking about these games weren't even close. And I'm sort of glad those games were not, like, today's games. Because Sunday's usually the day where everybody's home. Saturdays, especially when it's a nice day out, they don't want to go out. They don't want to go be somewhere where the games are blown. You know, they go out and do things. They don't want to sit home and watch basketball. Like, unlike us who just have, like, you know, we want to watch these games and dissect things and so on and so forth. The series that was really supposed to be the best match of the first round has seemed to disappoint. And I'm talking about the Memphis Grizzlies and the Clippers. And we'll go back to this in a little bit, but I really do feel that now that Russell Westbrook is out of the picture, that this is like the door opening for the Los Angeles Clippers. Because you have so much veteran talent. You have Grant Hill, you know, Jamal Crawford, Lamar Odom, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul. You have all these guys. This is the time for this team to make a run. And they can just as easily, they look like the last two games, they look like they just have no interest in playing. None.
Yep.
They go to nothing now, it's 2-2.
Yeah, outside of that game two win where Chris Paul took over down the stretch, they've been very streaky. They were really good in the fourth quarter in game one where they blew a close game open. They were really good in the second quarter yesterday to get back in that game and actually take the lead at the half. But then there's been too many times, like most of game three and the fourth quarter in game four, where they just bog down their offense. They wait for Chris Paul to create something. You know, they're not going to survive playoff games where Chauncey Billups and Caron Butler do not score at all. They're not going to survive any game where that doesn't happen because their offense relies too much on dribble penetration by Paul to either set up a lob for Griffin or kick it out to a three-pointer. That those two guys are too important to them not to score, and they haven't played well since game two or since game one. And yesterday was the high watermark in effectiveness.
Well, here's the problem too. I'm a firm believer that you go as your leader goes. I felt when I was watching the game, I only watched a little bit of the game here and there. And from what I saw from Chris Paul, he just didn't seem like he had a step. He was also, he was forcing. I felt like he was forcing.
You know,
forcing.
I thought I saw that too. I thought I saw that too. I also thought that Paul was a little more, when he went to the basket, was more worried about the contact and whether or not he was drawing a foul and whether or not he seemed to be, I don't know if you noticed it, but specifically in the first half, you're right, I didn't really pay too much attention to it in the second half because Memphis kind of took control. But Paul was very agitated at the refereeing and officiating in the first half, whether he was not getting fouls called or whether he thought there should have been more fouls called. I just think he was almost playing to the point of the refs, his anger towards the refs were taking him out of his game. And I think that was a real detriment in the second half to the Clippers because he was not effective in the second half. And Memphis's defense really put the clamps down in the fourth quarter.
And Zach Randolph looked like Zach Randolph yesterday. Second guessing that aspect of it. Man, when Zach Randolph's rolling, and then you have Marcus Gasol rolling, they might have the best 4-5 combination in the NBA right now, which you would think that the Lakers would have because the Lakers are a team. You know, when you think it's Dwight Howard and Paul Gasol, you're talking about two of the best big men in the game. You know, Gasol's a little older, but, you know, Dwight is supposed to be the second coming, and Gasol can run circles around him. So I really like the Grizzlies. I think the Clippers and the Grizzlies, I wish this would have been a second-round matchup. I think it would have been a lot more fun.
Right, me too.
It's just a shame it's not going to.
Both of these two teams can make a run, and it bothers me that this is a first-round matchup because it's essentially knocking out a team that can make a run. You know, kind of like those NCAA tournament games where you get like a 3-4 in the Sweet 16 that really should be a Final Four matchup, and you're just like, what the heck? This isn't fair. Tell me if you think the same way. This is with the Clippers, the Grizzlies, the Spurs, more so the Clippers, because I think the Clippers and the Knicks are kind of in the same veterans off the bench, a young core, you know, younger core, with Paul, Felton, Carmelo, Griffin, these are all guys that are in their mid to late 20s, still in the prime of their career. They're kind of in the same boat. A star goes down in the West in Westbrook that completely, I think, opens up, outside of the first round, the rest of this opens up the Western Conference playoffs because I think Oklahoma City was the presumptive favorite to get to the finals, just like Miami's the presumptive favorite in the East. However, if Dwayne Wade's knee begins to act up again, which it doesn't seem to be 100%, and the Bucks, I think, are a bad barometer for whether Wade is 100% because I think even a 60% Dwayne Wade can perform against whatever it is the Bucks are passing as defense these days because it's not defense. It's terrible. But those two... Exactly. It is... I think Samuel Dalembert was a negative 98 in Game 3. But the Wade... Not 100%, which he's clearly not. I think anybody who's watched Dwayne Wade over the years knows this Dwayne Wade is more like the Dwayne Wade of last year in the playoffs pre-rest in the Pacers series where I think he got his knee drained or whatever. But those two injuries open this up for the Clippers and Knicks. If they can get past round one, which obviously the Knicks are in a better position than the Clippers are now, but without Westbrook and without Wade being 100%, I know LeBron James is great, but the Knicks on paper matched up well with Miami to begin with. If Wade's not 100%, I know we're looking into the future, same with the Clippers and the Thunder, those make those matchups a lot better for L.A. and New York without those two cogs being there or being 100% in the case of Wade.
All right. We have Real Sports Talk Radio my partner in crime, Jose Padilla, joining us right now. Jose, we're talking a little bit right now. we're joking a little bit about the Clipper Grizzlies series before we jump into the Nets Bulls. I'll be honest with you. I thought we were just saying that this is the matchup that would have been probably better for a second round, but I also think that this is the matchup that has been the most lackluster and disappointing series because of the expectation level that it's had so far. What do you think?
Well, you know, unfortunately, if we could choose our matchups, you know, in the first round, I think that would make everybody happy because then we could just pick and choose who everyone plays. Unfortunately,
right,
it doesn't work out that way. We had a private conversation a while back. I don't know if you remember, but I actually told you I felt sorry that this was going to be a matchup because, to me, this is more a matchup on paper of a Western Conference final kind of matchup because both teams are that good. But
right.
It hasn't – you're right. It has not lived up to expectations. Both games in Los Angeles – I think one actually was kind of close. The other one was kind of a blowout. And the two games in Memphis have been kind of lackluster. So you're right on that point. I came in a little bit when talking about – you guys were talking about Wade and, you know, Westbrook and all the injuries. You know, listen, this is what happened in Chicago last year with Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose went out, and they fell victim to the 8-1 matchup. So I agree. This definitely makes the door that much more open for the Knicks to kind of bust through the Eastern Conference. This makes the door open for almost every team in the West with the exception of the Lakers, who are dreadful.
I'm actually playing for the Lakers tonight. I have a plane. I have to fly to L.A. tonight, but I'm actually going to play point guard tonight.
You know,
I got a call from Mitch Kupchak,
and they said
that they really needed it. They saw how dominant I was in, like, the gym league the other night. So
they actually called me to serve as left bench because they didn't even have enough guys to fill out the bench.
Yeah.
So
they figure at some point this game's going to go away from them, so we need someone that can play garbage time.
I would go and play point guard, but right now I just signed a contract to be another quarterback for the New York Jets. So
more quarterbacks.
By the way, real fast on that, the Giants have a steal in Nassib, and we'll talk about that another time, I'm sure. But that, I believe he will be Eli Manning's, he will be the heir apparent. But we'll talk about that another time.
Okay. Jose, we're talking about injuries too. I want to touch on the Russell Westbrook injury because this is, you know, now I think the West is really open up for grabs. And the Thunder are going to get by the Rockets because the Rockets are a 1.5-man show with James Harden and Jeremy Lin. They have some nice young talent, and they're short pigs. I think if you're the Nuggets and the Warriors, if whoever gets out of that series.
Which has been the best series by far, by the way.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, the Nuggets, Warriors. Give me those types of games. Yeah, give me those games all day. I'm fine.
It's not even close. Like, I may actually watch that at, 9:30 tonight? More than I'm going to watch the Lakers-Spurs at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock, I mean, you know what, I'm gonna get some dinner, watch a movie, play a little video game. I'm not going to pay, unless someone tells me, hey, the Lakers have this within 10 in the fourth quarter. I mean, you saw what the Lakers did the other night. It was a complete laydown. Now, granted, I don't know what you expect out of the Lakers if they can make it close, but now our Meta World Peace isn't playing. You already don't have Meeks and the two Steves. So, I mean, unless you think Andrew Godlock's going to drop 40 tonight, who outside of Laker fans is going to watch? I don't even know if Spur fans are going to watch.
Now, let me ask you guys this question. Let me just throw this out there. Would this have been a series if Kobe was involved?
Yes.
And I also think,
yes, because
I also
the Spurs
think
still...
Like, yeah, I also think guys like Steve Blake and Steve Nash would be pushing through if Kobe was out there. Because Kobe would be riding his guys. Kobe has that old-school mentality, and guess where he learned the old-school mentality from? Number 23. Number 23 says there's no excuses. Unless you have a broken bone, you're on the court. That's why Scottie Pippen was playing through those injuries during those last couple of years. If you remember during those 1998 finals, Pippen was struggling with his back, but he gutted it out because Michael was pushing him. Kobe is
I didn't realize he was that close to George Gervin.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry.
You know, Jose, Mike and I both have it on. If you turn on NBA TV, they're showing an abbreviated version of the Nets Bulls game from last night. From yesterday.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's still not even abbreviated. It's still like 4 hours.
It's, it's technically been on for about 3.5 hours.
So you're actually getting like the 2.5 hour version as opposed to the 6 hour version of the game.
Yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing, Jose. At the 2:59 mark. Okay, at the 2:59 mark, it was 109.95 Brooklyn.
I actually saw that. Yes.
Okay. And then, you know, an unbelievable run by the Bulls led by Nate Robinson. Yes, I said Nate Robinson, former New York Knicks, the guy who can dunk over Dwight Howard. Then again, everybody else seems to be dunking over Dwight Howard these days. He did it before it was popular. now everybody in the Western Conference can do it. So, with that being said, you know, it leads the team into overtime, and obviously we know the end of this game. This goes back to what you were saying a few weeks ago, Jose, on the show. Brooklyn may not just, you know, you look at their makeup of their team, they're just not that good. And what makes it even worse for them just may not be that good of a team, they're in salary cap hell. From the I have their salaries listed right up in front of me. You listen to this. This year, you have Joe Johnson making $19 million. You have Deron Williams making $17 million. You have Brooke Lopez making $13 million. Chris Humphreys, $12 million. Gerald Wallace, $9 million. There's still the amnesty Travis Outlaw, so his money's not there. They have Mizrant Teltovic, who's making $3 million. And then everybody else is in that million to mid-level, you know, beginner range.
You know,
next year it doesn't get better. Joe Johnson's $21 million next year. Deron Williams, $18 million next year. Brook Lopez, $14 million next year. You're stuck with Chris Humphreys next year. Gerald Wallace is at $10 million next year. So there's
so
no room for this team to get better. There's
so
no
what
room
you're saying,
for this team to
there
better.
Is a chance.
Yeah, this team's going to play exactly like this and be... the new version of the Atlanta Hawks. Yes, that's going to happen, my friend. Well, that's going to happen.
Well, look,
the ceiling is pretty limited. No, go ahead.
I was going to say I've been on this bandwagon of completely like disparaging the Nets because I just did not think they were that good. But to be fair, I did think they would beat the Bulls in this series because I just did not think the Bulls were that good either. I don't really know what's happened in this series other than the fact that either I overestimated the Nets. Or I completely underestimated the Bulls.
I think that's what it was. I think you and I have had this conversation both on and off the air. Thibodeau is a great coach, and he doesn't get the love that he sort of deserves. He pushes his guys. He has that offense. I like to call it the Allen Iverson 1-on-1-4 offense, where he lets the one ball handler create, whether he's going to shoot the ball or just tells everybody else just get the board if I miss. Type of mentality. And this is the type of, with Nate Robinson on the floor, Nate Robinson I don't think is obviously not as good as Derrick Rose, but he's putting Nate Robinson in that role.
Well, listen, let's be fair about this too. Nate Robinson scored pretty much 92% of his points in basically two quarters. So it's not like he was lighting it up all game. He just happened to get hot.
Right. And the thing is, though, that's what happens with a lot of guys in the league. They get hot and they ride him until he cools down.
Yeah, but
plus,
that, I mean,
you
those,
don't,
this is ridiculously hot. I mean, this is absurd. You don't expect that.
The one thing I'll say about what the Nets have, and you're right, this is pretty much their team for the next 4 years or so. It's locked into a team that's probably going to get you 45. You know, the Hawks capped out at, what, 53 wins 1 year? That's probably the limit the Knicks can get to, and 50 or the Knicks, the Nets can get to, and that's 53 is a pretty good number. But where the Hawks had guys that can create matchup problems like Johnson when he was younger, and Josh Smith specifically. Smith could lock down defensively when he was into it. The Nets, and the problem with letting Nate Robinson go like this is, Randy, you noticed that Deron Williams was on him a lot in that fourth quarter and overtime and second overtime till he fouled out, and Nate was still going off. And Deron Williams is probably their best perimeter defender, which is saying a lot because Deron really isn't a great perimeter defender. He's good, but I don't think he's in that Avery Bradley, Shumpert type level, Westbrook, where he's a lockdown defender or has the potential for it. good teams have that guy that they can put on a guy that's scoring well, you know, and hot. They have a guy that they can put on him to try and lock him down, whether it's a Bradley, Shumpert, Westbrook, those types of guys. The Nets don't have that. And it's a rare thing to have, I know. But they didn't have a guy that they could put on Nate Robinson to try and cool him down. And that kind of hurt them at the end because they had to put their best player on him, and Darren was having to exert so much energy trying to stay with Robinson that I think it kind of took away from his game on the offensive end. And that's why he was 2-for-11 in the overtimes.
Well, here's something even scarier, guys. I'm looking at salaries now for the Chicago Bulls. You know, obviously Derrick Rose is making $16 million this year to wear a suit. Carlos Boozer is going to save $15 million. Luol Deng is making $13.2 million. Noah's making $11 million. Hamilton is making $5 million, but they're not bringing Richard Hamilton back. He has a team option for next year. Kirk Heinrich is making $3.9 million in this year for next season as well. This is the one that Jose is going to scratch his head and go crazy about because you want to talk about a guy who sort of won the lottery for not being that good of a player. Taj Gibson's making $2.1 million this year. Next year, because he signed a contract extension, is making $7.5 million.
You know what? He fills a niche. He fills a niche for that team. He's not worth that money, but he fills a niche for that team.
Here's my point. Here's something I would think long and hard about if I'm running the Bulls. Do you amnesty Luol Deng because you have Jimmy Butler? Just throw it out there. I don't think you do because I think you like Butler, who can guard the ones and twos, and Deng can guard the threes and the small fours, and they both can kind of play together, so they're not really taking both spots. But again, it's at least a question because it saves you money, and Butler does do some of the things. But I agree. Me personally, I wouldn't do it because I think the two of them can guard four positions, and I think that's something you need in today's NBA with all the teams going to matchups and zones and big lineups, small lineups. Those guys give you an option to play defense on basically four positions.
I like the process that you got there. I like the door process you got going there. Here's the thing, and I think Randy would agree with me on this, or I would think he would. I think Jimmy Butler is a product of this Bulls team. He's a nice player. I don't think if you put him on another team, he'd be as good.
I agree with you.
He's going to be one of those guys.
100%.
I agree. I think he's going to be one of those people that will eventually leave for a big-time contract. Someone's going to overpay him. And then you're going to be wondering, 2 years after that, why the hell we gave this guy all this money?
I think you're right. I think he's a little bit of a product, but I also think that he's a guy that his game translates to multiple teams. A lot of teams can use a guy that can get to the basket, is athletic, and can play perimeter defense. In today's NBA, with lots of teams wanting to shoot threes and putting small lineups out there to create mismatches, just look at the Knicks, the Heat, how they play. They basically just play four shooters and either LeBron James, Chris Bosh, or you know Tyson Chandler hanging out in the paint. Butler fills a need for a lot of teams as a young, athletic wing that can guard ones, twos, threes, and he's getting better with his shot. I agree, he's not great. I'm not putting him on the same level as a Westbrook or an Avery Bradley in terms of their overall defensive ability on the wing, but he's up there. I mean, he's at least on par with Shumpert if you're talking about young guys that can guard the wings really well. He's up there.
I give you that. That's totally fair. But I just think what's going to end up happening is you're going to have this guy who people are going to be like, when he's a free agent, they're going to be like, oh. Because I don't think people are going to look at Shumpert that way. I think Shumpert might have to wait after his next go-around before people may start looking at that. Jimmy Butler's
probably one
of those guys that people are going to be looking at. Like, you know, this is a guy that we could probably build around, and some GM is going to do it, and other GMs are going to laugh.
I'm going to bring up another point to you. You know, the Bulls, you're right, the Bulls still haven't used their amnesty yet. If you're the Bulls, would you consider amnestying Boozer, who's making 15 this year, 15.3 this year, or 16.8 next year? Or if you're not 100% sure about Derrick Rose, would you amnesty Rose?
No.
That would be...
I think you need to give him... That would be a really bad move.
You would have to know that Rose is never coming back.
Yeah, you would need to see something like that. Boozer, I would have said in February at the All-Star break. There's no way he's going to be back next year. He's making too much money, and they have Taj Gibson that basically does the same things and kind of actually looks like Carlos Boozer, minus the tattoos and whatnot. Kind of actually looks like him on the...
That's a good call.
Bald head. But I think Boozer's played his way back onto the team next year. I mean, he's played absolutely lights out for now, going on almost 4 months, almost a consistent double-double. His defense is better than I think even I thought it was. Again, maybe just a product of the coaching at Thibodeau. I think Boozer's played his way back onto this team next year because with all the injuries, he's been the one constant, and he's even elevated his game to levels that I don't think he's ever played at in terms of being a go-to one-on-one low post guy that can get you 16 rebounds and go with 25 points.
Guys, also, you know, let's look at the other side of this playoff series, too, and going back to the Brooklyn Nets. If there's one guy who the Nets brought in this year and who, you know, or re-signed this year compared to from last year's debacle team, and that has seemed like to have lost his way more than Chris Humphries, it's Gerald Wallace. Gerald Wallace, who's been an all-star with Charlotte, had a promising start in Sacramento, and, you know, came to the Nets last year when they were still in Jersey. He is just, there's never been a guy who I felt who was the first chip in Brooklyn before Darren Williams signed back on, just sort of fallen off the face of this team and has no confidence. He doesn't look like he knows anything that's really going on out there. Is Gerald Wallace. And it's a shame because he's a good player. He does all those little things, but it seems like he got lost in the shuffle. And it looks like he might play fine and get himself off of this team for next season.
Oh, it's really bad. Him and the problem is what do you do with his contract? I mean, what NBA team is going to take 3 more years at $30 million of Gerald Wallace when everybody has seen that Gerald Wallace's game was predicated on athleticism, you know, defense, scrappy play, and he was a decent three-point shooter when he was in his prime in Charlotte, but he's just completely fallen off the map, and it started when he was in Portland a year ago. He was in Portland. Everybody realized that this guy's not the same player, and the Nets panicked because they felt they needed to make some sort of move to try and keep Darren Williams. And
this is what happens when you have to make moves to keep somebody.
Exactly. I just don't know. I think they're stuck with him, and they have to hope that he becomes kind of reinvents himself as a defensive guy, but even his defense isn't that good. You know, he was brought in to play the those big athletic wings that are in the Eastern Conference, Pierce, LeBron, Carmelo, and I don't have the LeBron numbers off the top of my head. I know the Heat swept them, but Carmelo Anthony averaged, 37 points a game against the Nets this year, mostly going against Gerald Wallace. The one thing he was brought in to do, he wasn't even that good at doing, and that should have been the first red flag that something is amiss with Gerald Wallace in terms of his play. And now they're locked into him. They can probably get rid of Humphries, but I don't know what you're going to get for him. I don't think you're going to get some sort of difference maker for you know, the expiring contract of Chris Humphries. I don't even think you're going to get a first round pick for it. So, you know, I don't know what you're going to get out of that, but you're getting nothing for Gerald Wallace. I'll tell you right now, there's probably not a team in the league that would trade for 3 years at $30 million of Gerald Wallace, given what he's shown this year.
And, guys, I'm also going to throw this at you, too. The way Wallace was brought to the Nets was the day after Dwight Howard announced he was going to stay in Orlando. So, you know, people will praise Billy King for the job that he did putting this team together. He undid all the work that Rod Thorne had done, getting this team underneath the cap and getting all those draft picks. I think if more teams took the Oklahoma City Thunder approach of raising your homegrown guys, I know it's a rare thing that it actually works, but when it does, it's brilliant, and you stay underneath the cap.
You have to be bad that you get to that point.
Have to be lucky too.
Because listen, they were very close. They everyone wanted Oden that draft, and there was debate. Imagine if Portland had taken Durant, and Oden had been the guy in Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City would still be a mess.
You know what's funny is you also have to remember, Russell Westbrook coming into that draft was almost like the term they use in the NFL, workout warrior. He was the backup to Darren Collison for 2 years. he left as pretty much, he never started a game at UCLA. He was pretty much their sixth man off the bench. Dominated every workout he was in. Rose from a you know, mid first round pick kind of sleeper to the fourth pick in the draft. I don't think anybody had any idea that Westbrook was going to become arguably, if not the best, he's probably top three point guards in the NBA.
I can tell you honestly, you know, I actually told this to Randy. I don't know. Again, this is a long time ago, so I don't know if he remembers. I actually said the minute I found out that the Knicks were secretly hoping he was going to fall to them, that's when I knew Russell Westbrook was going to be a top five pick.
Oh, I said it too. When I actually remember that. When they said he was the guy the Knicks really wanted, I remembered him because I remembered him at UCLA, and I said, I don't know, because no one saw enough of Westbrook at UCLA to really know what he could be. I mean, everyone just assumed if he couldn't beat out Darren Collison for a spot as a starter, what could his ceiling really be? Because no one really assumed Ben Hallen was dumb enough to not start Russell Westbrook. Well, apparently Ben Hallen was dumb enough not to start Russell Westbrook.
Well, no, I'll say this. I do watch a lot of college ball, so I was actually familiar with this dude. I'll tell you, no, Hallen was not dumb. Because all the complaints you see about him in his pro game is everything that was the complaint in his college game.
Well, yeah, Hallen's not the guy that's going to sit there and stand for some of the mistakes that Westbrook still makes in terms of Collinson has always been more of a better pure point guard than Westbrook has. Westbrook's intangibles, his athleticism, are off the charts, and that's what makes him better than Collison. But you're right, a college coach like Howland is going to start a guy like Collison because he knows what he's going to get from him, and he's consistent, and he doesn't make too many boneheaded mistakes like Westbrook does. But to your point, Randy, about the Nets and Billy King destroying everything Rod Thorn did, the biggest mistake they made was spending money in the summer of 2010 when they got shut out from all the big stars. They spent way too much money on terrible guys like Outlaw, and they took most of their cap space and just signed garbage with it. When they really, if they were smart, they would have held on to it and just kept moving it along, collecting their picks, moving along. There was this need to want to be like the Knicks because they had to make a splash in Brooklyn and had to get big stars, had to do this, had to do that. You know, they could have built a nice team around Favors and Lopez in terms of a 4-5 combination, pretty much what Utah's done with Favors. And I think that the moves they made in the summer of 2010 were really bad moves, and then they had to counteract those bad moves by making worse moves.
Those moves were made on a cheap end, though, because you got Anthony Morrow, Jordan Farmar.
Well, I like
Neil
those
Hunt.
Moves. Morrow wasn't bad, but it's the Outlaw move. The Outlaw signed a pretty big deal with them.
But they amnestied him. So at the end of the day, that money doesn't be. It's not the money against the cap. You know, we're talking about situations of salary. We're going to have Kenny Anderson on from the former New Jersey Nets guard. Kenny Anderson's going to join us in a few minutes. You know, the Knicks situation. And I'm going to jump into this, and I'm going to hit the Knicks-Celtics series with you both before Kenny comes on real quick. We're talking about salaries. You know, Amari's due 21 next year, as we know. Carmelo's getting 21 next year. Tyson Chandler's getting 14. Guys, this is where it gets a little tricky. You have Marcus Camby signed for another 2 years. And he's making 3.3 next year. He's getting 4.1 the following year.
Well, isn't it his third year is a team option, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's guaranteed.
It's not? I thought it was. Okay.
No. You have Steve Novak in the fold now for another 3 years. And you have Raymond Felton getting $4 million for the next 3 years. And he has a player option in 2015-2016. And you're locked into Jason Kidd for another 2 years. And J.R. Smith, who I think has every right to renegotiate his contract this year, is only making 2.9 this year. And he's not signed through. He's done at the end of the year.
He's going to be gone. There's no question in my mind he's going to be gone. Well, I'm going to have to bounce though, guys, unfortunately, because I have to make my lovely wife her breakfast. But
Okay, Jose, one quick question. One quick question for you. If you're the next, do you sign Kenyon Martin during the offseason?
He's only 35. It depends on what happens. You know what? I want to see what happens the rest of this year. I want to see how he looks. If it's not going to be for too much money, I would definitely be all up about doing that. But if he's going to want, like, $5 million a year, then, I mean, I don't even know if that's feasible for them. So I would say if the price is right, if he's going to sign a J.R. Smith contract, then I'd be okay with that. But nothing more than that. I mean, there's other ways to build this team.
Sounds fair. That's fair. All right, thanks for coming on, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Have a great show. Tell Kenny
what's up. Hold on, one more thing. Should I make an announcement now? Starting in 2 weeks?
Oh, yeah, sure. Why not? You want to do it? You go ahead and do it.
Okay. Hey, Mike, I just want to let you know Real Sports Talk Radio is expanding. We are now over on the Friday nights. We are heading over to the Friday nights. Jose and I will be back better than ever. We'll be back.
Not necessarily
we'll be
better.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how much better we're going to be. We'll be on at 9:30 to 11 or 11:30. We haven't decided that aspect of it. We're going to take Friday nights by storms, and Sunday morning will be taken over by Ryan Stern, and I'll be producing that show. So there's a lot of changes over here at Real Sports Talk Radio, but we're expanding, not disbanding. So you guys can have Jose back in the booth, and we're going to be rolling and having a lot of fun. So
the other thing about that, too, is we're actually going to be doing the show together, folks. Together.
Yes, it will no longer be in like separate places, which I think is which is brilliant. So
now when Randy starts crying, it's because I made him cry in person.
Yeah, it's actually because he'll punch me in the mouth. It's basically a win-win for everybody. So
yeah.
With that being said, Jose, go make your lovely bride a nice breakfast, and then we will talk to you next week.
Yeah, definitely, man. Take care, guys. Have a great day. Enjoy the rest of the games today.
That is the world famous Jose Padilla. Okay, not world famous. He's famous. He's famous.
Yeah.
In his own mind, he's famous. So, Mike, yeah, it was nice having Jose on because I think, like he was sitting there saying before, it's an interesting situation what's going on right now with the Knicks and the Nets and in the metropolitan area. I'll be honest with you, I think both teams are not set up for success right now.
I would say their success. You know, you're not wrong in saying that. You're kind of, I think both teams. There's a plateau that I think both teams get to. Now, there's extenuating factors. Carmelo Anthony's playing like an MVP this year. J.R. Smith's the sixth man of the year. The veterans have given you more than I think you could have expected, whether it's Prigioni, Kidd, or even Kenya Martin. Because you've basically really got nothing except 20 games from Stoudemire this year. So that's something you didn't plan for, considering he was healthy coming into the year and then got hurt in training camp. To your question about can they re-sign Kenya Martin, if Kenya Martin, I think, is a candidate for the mini-mid level this year, or the biannual, whatever they want to call it nowadays, if he wants to take that, the Knicks will gladly have him back for it. According to the thing with J.R. Smith, the interesting thing is he loves to play here. He's home. He loves being around his family. He's got a little daughter that he loves being around. He loves playing for Mike Woodson. There's no guarantee that he's going to mesh with another coach like he meshes with Mike Woodson. Can the Knicks convince him to, A, either take that four-year, $25 million deal they can offer him, which is more than he's ever made in any 1 year, or, B, can they get him to accept his player option for this year, knowing next year they have his full bird rights and can sign him for anything? So it's an interesting move. If he's going straight for the money, you're right. He's not going to be back. He's going to take a big offer, and he's not going to be back. But if he wants to play for a contender, play with his friends, which Carmelo Anthony's become probably his best friend on the team. Not to mention Kenya Martin, Ray Felton. He loves playing in New York, and like I say, he's home. He's a guy that's mercurial. No one really knows what he's thinking. But I think that the being home aspect and playing for a coach that he enjoys playing for, Mike Woodson, there's no guarantee, as you've seen with him playing with George Karl, there's no guarantee from coach to coach that he's going to get along with every coach or is going to let every coach prod him and annoy him and push him like Mike Woodson has. I think there's a chance he leaves, but I also think there's a chance that he stays, either for a long-term deal or he accepts his player option and gets a big-time deal next year.
But listen, at the end of the day, J.R. Smith just won the Sixth Man of the Year award. He's done his job. He fulfilled his role that Mike Woodson asked. Does he want to be a starter? Absolutely.
Oh, I think any player wants to be a starter. But the question is he going to take a $12 million a year deal from Charlotte to be the starting two guard? is Charlotte going to pay? You know, there's only so many teams that are under the salary cap, and really none of those teams are really in a position to be a playoff team. So it comes to the point is if J.R. Smith wants to be a starting shooting guard and making, you know, big time money on a bad team. If he does, then he, like I said, he'll be gone.
I want to remind all fans, Knicks fans, every type of fan out there, and remind that this is a business.
Exactly.
This is a business, and they have to do what's best for their family. And with that being said, J.R. Smith is only making $2 million this year. And $2.5 million this year. Carmelo Anthony is making 21. Like they said before, is it show friends or show business? At the end of the day, you know, Richard Jefferson and other athletes have told me they have best friends who play on other teams. But they have to do what's best to feed their family. Chase Blackburn, you know, and I had a great conversation last week. He says he's great friends with guys like Canty and, you know, Tuck and Bradshaw. But they, you know, was he going to sign again with the Giants for $1 million, or was he going to take the opportunity to, you know, to take a deal for guaranteed $5 million plus a signing bonus of $4 million, you know, so he gets an extra $4 million guaranteed to move his family to Charlotte. When I spoke to him this week, he was picking up houses. He says, as much as I live in the New York, New Jersey area, Charlotte's going to be my home because they, you know, they paid me, and, you know, we're going to make a life for us down here because it's a little easier than being up in New York. You can't blame the guy. It doesn't mean he doesn't still have really good friends. It's people he's not going to communicate with. So, you know, that's the life of a pro athlete. J.R. Smith was in Denver before all this.
I mean, it's an interesting topic because if he leaves, you know, at this point, I think it's 50-50 that he leaves. It's just a question of, you know, he's different enough as a person to be different enough. he's to say he's different, I think, is a misunderstatement of J.R. Smith, personally. But I don't know. If I had an idea, it seems to change by the week with me. One week I'm thinking there's no way he's staying. Another week, you know, I think differently. We won't know. And personally, I don't know if he knows.
I'll be honest with you. I think J.R. Smith, you know, was the breakout player for the Knicks this year. Played excellent. The Knicks are really in deep trouble with their salary. Let's welcome former New Jersey Knicks point guard, former Boston Celtics point guard, great friend of the show. Right now he's working on his book, Instructions Not Included. Let's welcome Kenny Anderson to the program. Kenny, how are you today, my friend?
How you doing, Randy? How's everything?
Good. You're also online with Mike Tramatazzi.
Hey, Ken.
Right now, Kenny, you know, we're discussing some of the New York Knicks situation, but first I want to get your view on some of these playoff games from yesterday. Let's start with the Brooklyn-Chicago game. I think we have not had over the last couple of years the type of games like this where you're on your toes. You know, with 3 minutes left, Bulls were down 12 points, 12, 14 points. When was the last time you saw something like this?
I haven't in a while, and you know, you think of a Chicago Bulls team now, defensive-minded team, down 12 points, that, you know, it's over. You know what I mean? But Nate Robinson came in and just had a spectacular game, hitting all types of shots, and so rolled out. They needed someone, you know, to do the scoring and take apart that load. But you know, I think Nate is a great little big man, but it's either with him, it's feast or famine. And yesterday was feast. So he had a remarkable game.
Hey, Kenny, this is Mike. I want to talk about Russell Westbrook for a second. You've played on teams that obviously have multiple stars with Derek Coleman, Paul Pierce. When one of those guys is out, as you see with Westbrook being out, Durant comes out and scores 40 points last night. What does that put on the second star, whether, you know, with New Jersey and maybe you were out or Derek was out? Is that something that the other guy then picks his game up, but it gets harder? Or do you think it's something that those with teams with multiple stars are better capable if one guy's out for a stretch like this?
In the Thunder's case, it's going to affect them as they get deeper in the playoff. They can beat the Houston Rockets without them. Reggie Jackson now, his growth is gonna, you know, is gonna come a lot quicker. He has to, you know, he has to perform. Then he, you know, went back to him. He got Derek Fisher, who's a veteran, who will help his, who would help him with his growth, as you know, development as a true point guard. That's Reggie Jackson. But you know, again, Kevin Durant, he's gonna have to score maybe 40, like he did last game, like every game, you know, for them to be successful, especially in the second round. You know, he's gonna have to have that type of LeBron James effect, where you know he's starting the offense and finishing the offense. You know, he has to be that that guy who starts up everything, and you know, now that Westbrook is out.
Again, also, like you just said before, they're going to beat the Houston Rockets. If you try and look forward and into the crystal ball with the Oklahoma City Thunder playing against Denver and Golden State, both of those teams are a high, quick power team, a team that Russell Westbrook would probably play very well against. Are those two teams now sort of, you know, licking their chops if they look forward to the next round and say, listen, yeah, you got Durant, but what, you know, you don't have that number two guy, or the Thunder could be able to take the attitude like the Celtics had, is listen, you just lost Rajon Rondo. This is the opportunity now. We can move the ball and let other guys shine and be able to have the opportunity to beat you.
Yeah, this is when you know Scott Brooks, the coach of Oklahoma City. This is when you earn your money, and this is where he has to get those guys motivated. And yeah, you know, sometimes the sum. That's how Denver Nuggets are. The sum of the team is better than the individuals. So they have numerous guys that can really get it done in Denver. And, you know, if they do happen to win that series against the Golden State Warriors, Denver, it looks, you know, it's going to look pretty. Everybody right now out west is pretty exciting, you know, excited that Westbrook is injured. You know, you really don't want nobody to get injured, but they're licking their chops, the Spurs, the Clippers, or even Denver. I could see, you know, Denver now reaching the Western Conference Finals. You can't replace Westbrook. But what you can do is what you said, they can move the ball, get everybody involved. And then somebody in the NBA, everybody get paid. Everybody got a contract. Everybody get paid nicely. Somebody got to step up. Kevin Martin, you know, now got to, you know, come in and step it up.
Hey, Kenny, also, you know, we were discussing the Knicks before, right when you came on. If you're the New York Knicks, are you giving a contract extension to Kenyon Martin?
A well-deserved veteran. You know, what, he got 2-3 years? I might do it. Who's out there? Who's out there now that could give him a 2-year deal, you know, even maybe 2 years, you know, right? We saw he came in and he held it down, tough rebounder, defensive guy, a veteran, you know. Why not? Why not? I would, you know, at least, you know, get him in there. Maybe he can work with some of the young guys, you know, on the team. No, they got a very old team. I wouldn't be. I would give him a 2-year extension, probably.
Kenny, you played against Jason Kidd. You've watched Jason Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing what Jason Kidd has brought to this team, everybody talks about the intangibles, the mental aspect that Kenny has. What have you seen from Raymond Felton's game that kind of you can kind of see the influence that Jason Kidd has kind of had on his game this season?
I think it's overused sometimes when you're like, oh, you know, the veteran's coming in and, oh, he's teaching him and he's cool. Man, nobody teaching no pro player, you know, first of all. Nobody's teaching no pro player. Nobody's teaching Raymond Felton how to play the point guard position. But it does bring a calm influence. Raymond Felton now has a veteran who's done it time in and time again that he can lean on his shoulder and say, hey, we've been in this type of situation. I would, you know, talk it to him, giving him encouragement, you know, so his confidence won't sway. But, you know, I think in that case, and I think Kidd, you know, 40 years old, is playing off a sheer brain. You know, he's out. His high basketball IQ is very high. And, you know, in spurts, he's able to really, you know, dig, you know, get steals, hit, they big shots. But, you know, 40 years old, I take my hat off to him because I'm 42 and I'm playing the JCC leagues and playing at the rec and I'm hurting. So I can imagine what he's going through. But he's a wonderful player, and he's, you know, he's definitely been a great influence, you know, for the Knicks.
Shane, what has been the most entertaining series for you so far during these playoffs?
I like this Clippers Memphis series. That's a banger. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a grinded out series. You know, Memphis and Memphis a great defensive team, and the Clippers is an underrated defensive team. I wouldn't be surprised if that series goes 7. Start up at 2-2, and you know, it's going to be interesting. I thought Coach Holland is doing a great job because I thought when they got rid of Rudy Gay that. It is shown, too, that they're scoring. It'll be hard for them to score. But what they do to replace it is they hang their hat on defense. And Connolly, who's really coming into his own the last year, is playing very good ball. Tayshaun Prince has came in and been a calm influence. They're a veteran, a champion. He knows how to play the game. So they're spreading the wealth. They're spreading the wealth around. Then they got the two big guys who, you know, dominate, you know, throughout the league, the Bangers, Marc Gasol and Randolph, whose inside tandem is just so strong. So that Clippers Memphis series is going to be tough.
Right now we have Kenny Anderson on with us here at Real Sports Talk Radio, 760-283-0846. Kenny, I got to ask you also, in the Eastern Conference, it feels like it's almost like a zigzag with the Atlanta-Indiana series, which I chose to be probably one of the most underrated series in the playoffs, just because I think both teams have a real different dynamic, but there's similarities. Both being strong in the post with Hibbert and West and Horford and Josh Smith, it's going to be guys like Devin Harris and Paul George and Jeff Teague, George Hill are going to be the guys who are going to be the difference makers. This is a series that nobody's talking about. Who do you see coming out of this series?
I really believe the Indiana Pacers is going to win the series. But the Hawks, it was a desperate team. You got to understand, you know, and then you got, you know, the coach, my coach's hat on, you're down 2-0 going back home. You got to motivate, you got to motivate the players, and they had some horrible starts in 1 and 2 with the Hawks. So, and they was embarrassed, so they came home and did what they were supposed to do and got a win. And now, you know, we'll see. Now, Game 4, we'll see, you know, if they're still, you know, really energized and ready to play ball. But I think Indiana has the edge and will win the series.
Is this the end of the Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett era in Boston?
Yeah. You know, I'm a Celtic. I love it. Played there for 5 years, but it's a wrap. I believe it's a wrap. Kevin Garnett has numerous injuries. He's still, you know, he's giving it his all. He's a warrior. Paul Pierce is just, you know, I think by them losing Rondo, first of all, no, by them losing Ray Allen was a big loss. Then Rondo goes down, was even bigger. So they had Avery Bradley out there who's, you know, he's inconsistent. He can play defense, but he's not no point guard. You know, so it's just been tough. Jeff Green has had an inconsistent year, but he looks like you could build with him, Jeff Green and Rondo. But I just think they're gonna have to do something, you know, for the future. Maybe get something for Paul Pierce. I don't know, but they definitely gotta do something to rebuild or reload. But I think it's over.
You know, Kenny, I'm looking through the salaries right now for next season. Boston is Paul Pierce is making 15.3, Garnett's making 11.5, Rondo's making 12.2, Jeff Green 8.7, Brandon Bass 6.7. Like you just said, there's something going to end up having to give. Both guys have stated that they want to retire as Celtics. Do you think Danny Ainge will give them the option of, you know, stepping away, or will they? Do you think they'll make a move and just try and trade both guys during the offseason?
If I'm a GM, there's no lawyer in the business. You know, you're looking at a real complicated situation like Larry Bird, Devin McHale, Robert Parrish thing, where you just keep them. You just keep them until they retire, and then you really have to rebuild. Like and nowadays, how long the rebuilding stages? You know, 3 to 5 years, 6 years. You're down. You're playing mediocre ball. You're six, seventh, eighth seed and losing each year. So, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't see it. I think they tried to trade Paul before trade deadline, and they couldn't do it. They didn't want some of the pieces that they was asking for. So, Danny Ainge has an interesting summer. You know, if you move one of them, I don't think. If I had to guess, you know, Kevin Garnett has a no-trade clause, but me being a Celtic for 5 years and coming in, Paul Pierce was a rookie when I was there. He has to, you know, it'd be weird. I couldn't see him in another uniform. I just couldn't see it. I want him to retire as a Celtic. Kevin Garnett, I don't, you know, maybe, you know, you get something for him, but Paul Pierce not with the Celtics would be strange.
I am not sure if the Celtics have used their amnesty yet, but they could also either amnesty one of those two guys, let them retire, and then, you know, their money won't count against the cap. Kenny, I'm against the clock here. We're getting ready to be joined by Charles Curtis and Ryan Stern in a few minutes to break down some of the NFL draft. I know you're a Cowboy. A Cowboys fan, were you happy with any of the offseason moves so far done by Dallas?
You know what? I really am bummed on this because I really don't know these guys. I didn't pay attention to the NFL draft because it's too long. I'm going to get on my roster in a couple of weeks, like a couple of days. I'll just look at who we did and what it's about. But we always need help, like running back. Like, Murray is good, but he's always injured. So I would look at the running back and our corner, secondary, was always, you know, a problem. And then our line, offensive line, we got to get better there. Give Romo some time. And then, you know, so those are the three things that I would always look for with my Cowboys. We have a very talented roster, but guys, it's football. Guys are always getting banged up and getting injured. So I'm not sure what we're going to do, but, you know, we have to make the playoffs and beyond. So they just freed up Romo, so hopefully he'll come and have a better season. A great season next year.
The great Kenny Anderson. Kenny, looking forward to talking with you soon. We'll have you back on in the next couple of weeks throughout the playoffs.
All right, my God. Thanks.
Thank you. The great Kenny Anderson, 760-283-0846. Now joined by Ryan Stern from Real Sports Talk Radio and Back Sports Page. Ryan, good afternoon. Good morning.
Good afternoon, or almost afternoon, guys. How's everything been going so far today?
Well, right now, just back me and you. We had Mike Kramatosi listen to Talking with Sports with Mike T every Monday afternoon from 12 to 12:30 here on the Back Sports Page Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. Obviously, Kenny Anderson just joined us. We had Jose back on with us for a little bit. And we, of course, just had Kenny Anderson talking NBA playoffs and the whole we just went around the league and the playoffs. And before we jump into hockey or the NFL draft, final note for me on the NBA. People know that growing up, I was a notorious Nets fan, but since becoming a member of the media and getting involved with business more, the rule is, the unofficial law is you don't play by your heart. You don't go that route. You basically, you know, you have to be right down the middle. I hated all the moves that the Nets made during the offseason. I had made that clear. I did not like a lot of the moves. Let me go one more, Ryan. Joe Johnson was a bad contract to start with Atlanta. Now it's even worse. Now it's worse because the Nets are in salary cap hell. We went over the numbers earlier. Joe Johnson, Joe Johnson's making $18 million next year. He's making. Then you have Darren Williams, who's making $17 million. Chris Humphries is on this roster for next year. Gerald Wallace, who's been missing in action for the last 2 months of the year. This team is a disastrous team. And like we said, Billy King Billy King put this team together and just sort of undid all the work that Rod Thorn did. Rod Thorn put two Eastern Conference championship teams together and then had an owner who didn't want to spend money. So you're forced to trade a Kenyon Martin, brought in Vince Carter, and was bringing in guys, and Jason, you know, couldn't re-sign these guys, and Jason Kidd was making these guys millions, and they never had the success they had anywhere else than they had in New Jersey. So when Rod Thorn steps away, Billy King takes all that work of staying underneath the cap and compiling draft picks for the future, and it totally goes to the wayside. So, Ryan, we're getting ready to start talking a little NFL and NHL for the last half hour of the show here with Charles Curtis. He'll be joining us within the next couple minutes. Ryan, you were at the draft. Talk to us about the general feeling of it, what was going on, what were the crowd reactions, and was Manti Te'o's make-believe girlfriend in the audience?
Oh, you went there.
Yes, I did.
Well, there actually was a person wearing a shirt that said, "I am Lene Kukua." So I guess the girlfriend was in attendance.
That's so wrong.
Oh, my God. I guess it started off with pretty much of a surprise. Luke Jokel was the consensus number one overall pick for the past couple months, and then we started hearing mumblings on Wednesday that the Chiefs may be looking into Eric Fisher instead, and they did. They went that way. They decided to go with the Central Michigan offensive tackle. And so right away you knew that it was going to be a different draft than you normally see. A lot of times the first 10 picks are very predictable. Here you couldn't even predict the first one. So the crowd was definitely intense, especially when it came to picks that were more local. Giants, Jets, and Eagles were the three big ones. The Jets had a very good first round. They had two picks, one getting the 13 pick from Tampa in the Darrell Revis trade. With the 9 pick, they took Dee Milner, who everyone pretty much said was the top cornerback in the draft. My only issue with him is that he's had 5 surgeries by the time he's 21 years old. So, and most of them on his shoulder. So it won't really affect the way that he moves. But you never know if he's going to have to miss time if something happens with a tackle. And the unfortunate thing for him is now he's going to be compared to Revis for his whole career because he's the one stepping in right after the Revis trade.
All right, Ryan. Well, let's bring in another perspective. Let's bring in our good friend Charles Curtis from NJ.com. We haven't had him on for a little while. Charles, welcome back, my friend.
You know, you guys bring me on after, I think the last time I was here, you guys brought me on after Junkyard Dog, and now I have to follow up Kenny Anderson. That is, that's heavy, a heavy load to bring back, but I'm here and I'm ready to chat. How's it going?
Listen, the reason why we do that is those guys sometimes do not bring their A game. You always bring your A game. So we consider it almost like a step up when you're on. Charles, you know, there's so much going on, especially with you this time of year between the draft and the NHL, and especially with the Rangers. The Rangers certainly didn't make it easy on you this year, did they?
Not on themselves and not on certainly on the Raiders, but they're the sixth seed, and I really, really like what they did in the last month of the season. They beat the teams they're supposed to beat, and now they've got a pretty decent matchup with the Washington Capitals, a team that's kind of similar. I think they really righted the ship over the last month.
My question to you is there any teams in the playoffs right now that sort of surprised you that they should be there or they shouldn't be there?
I would say the Minnesota Wild kind of made it in by the skin of their teeth. They're a little bit of a surprise, I would say. They're the eighth seed in the West, so it is a huge surprise. They played pretty well. I think given the investments made by the front office to bring in two high-profile free agents, they're really happy to be in the playoffs, that their fan base can say, Well, they spent all this money. At least, you know, they spent it on a guy like Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, and they can actually be in the playoffs. And yes, they'll face the best team in the league in the Chicago Blackhawks, but still, I was a little bit surprised. I think there were a lot of New York fans on Twitter I saw that were gunning for, they were hoping for Columbus getting the eighth seed, especially after Marian Gaborik went over there and Brandon Dubinsky went over there. And Anisimov is over there, and sort of, you know, Rangers, I guess you call it Rangers Midwest. So I think that was kind of what a lot of fans hoped for.
Charles, Ryan Stern here. I know before the season, it was pretty much everywhere you read that Montreal and Toronto were going to battle out for who had the best chance for the first pick in the draft this summer. And now it looks like that they're going to be the 4-5 matchup in the East. Which one of those two teams surprised you the most about making it into the playoffs?
I'm going to go with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I really did like what Montreal had. I've always thought that Carey Price was a really good goaltender. And you look at Montreal's makeup, and I kind of looked at the beginning of the year and said, yeah, maybe they'll make it to the playoffs. Maybe they'll be a 7 seed or something like that because they have the speed. They're coached really well, but you know it was all goaltending, and PK Subban was just. I think he'll definitely win for best defenseman this year. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, they have a lot of good names there. They have the Dion Phaneuf of this world, and they have you know Phil Kessel, really talented guys. But you didn't expect James Reimer to do what he did. Absolutely not. You always thought, well, they're going to trade for Luongo. They're going to end up with goaltending issues, and he got them really where they were, and so did Nazem Kadri, who was just talked about over and over years and years, oh, he's this great prospect, he's got a lot of talent, and then he proved it this year by being, I would argue, one of the most improved players in the NHL. He was just spectacular to watch and consistent, and that's kind of, I think, what Toronto needed going forward, and they're a really tough team, and I'm really, I know I write about the NHL, but I'm gunning for a Toronto-Montreal matchup. Hopefully Boston will win today to secure that because that will be one of the great playoff series, I think, in recent memory.
Now, talking about most improved players, the Rangers definitely have one of those. And John Tortorella yesterday in his post-game press conference said that their MVP this year was Derek Stepan. And of course, everyone's going to say Henrik Lundqvist because he keeps them in just about every game. Tell me a little bit about what Derek Stepan brought to the team this year.
He came into the year. It was kind of funny. In the offseason and during the lockout, there was a lot of chatter all over the internet, and it was just not the experts, but sort of fans saying, oh, you know, Ryan O'Reilly, we'll trade Stepan for him, or, oh, you know, we'll make a deal this way for Stepan. And I thought, you're going to give up on a guy who's only been in the league for a few years and he's young and he's you know projected to be their number two center and you're really going to talk about trading him. And, of course, those fans are eating crow now. And I really have enjoyed watching Derek, what he's brought to him. He's brought this consistent every game. He's playing, you know, in both zones and he's, you know, he's great through the neutral zone. But what I saw out of him this year particularly was kind of almost an increase in patience. When he has the puck, he's got vision. He's got. He's not the fastest skater on the ice, but you're watching him make the decisions and make the right passes and the right plays. And John Tortorella, and he said it yesterday. Yeah, he's been our best player all season. It's true. I mean, Rick Nash obviously is a star, but game to game, Derek Stepan has shown just how amazing he can be when he's on the puck all the time. He's making right plays. He's digging it out of the corners. It's been a really incredible thing to watch, and he's really still just young. He's going to get a lot of money in the offseason, I can guarantee you that.
And it's funny because he sort of reminds you a little bit of Brad Richards when he was younger and just entering the prime of his career.
That's a good way to compare it, I would say. Yeah, exactly. I think that you know, Brad Richards, both of them are good skaters, not the greatest skaters, but again, they have vision, they have touch. And you've seen actually Brad Richards have a lot more of that in the last month or so of the season, is that same skating ability that's been brought back in those crisp passes. And really, you know, confidence is the word I would use, and I know that's sort of an intangible in any sport, but you see it in both of them. They play with confidence, and that's the kind of thing that the Rangers, I think, lacked for a month during the season or so when they were kind of trying to dig themselves out of a hole.
And speaking of confidence, is there anybody in the NHL playing with more confidence right now than John Tavares?
About a month ago, I think I was talking about it with some people. I said, you know, if he doesn't get some Hart Trophy votes, I'm going to be really, really furious. And frankly, I think there are going to be a few people who are going to vote him for the Hart Trophy to win it all. I think, obviously, Sidney Crosby had an incredible year before he got injured. But we're talking about John Tavares, a guy who you take him off of the Islanders roster and they have nothing. And I'm not saying, you know, Nabokov had a terrible year. Sure, Matt Molson. But Matt Molson plays really well with Tavares. They get terrific together, obviously. But you take nothing away from what the Islanders have done and kind of how they've dug themselves out of the hole. But John Tavares, every night, it's just incredible to watch him go from really, really good, you know, obviously he was a top pick, to star. And I think, you know, given the Islanders are going to be in Brooklyn in a couple of years, I think they're going to love having a star to build around like that. And a guy who could conceivably win a Hart Trophy, given how he's carried the Islanders on his back the whole season.
What happened with the Devils this year?
What didn't happen to the Devils this year? I think we talked about them early in the year, as I recall, and I think I said that they'll always surprise you. And actually, this year they did surprise me a bit. I think that there were a lot of holes in that team. They were a little young in certain places, and they got a little banged up. I think when Marty Brodeur goes down, no matter what happens, even at his age, you're going to take a hit from that. You know, Ilya Kolchuk had his moments where you thought he disappeared. And there were, by the way, a lot of plays yesterday where you saw Ilya Kolchuk kind of behind the player, you know, struggling defensively. And I just think that their collapse shows you that they have some of the right future in place. But ultimately, they had a few injuries, too, they had to deal with. There wasn't a cohesive, great young bunch that was coming up and rising up like they usually do for the Devils. You know, you had Eliash and you had Clarkson kind of playing well. But other than that, then there's a drop-off, I think, that you just saw a lot of young guys like the Travis Zajac who, you know, they'll continue to work on their games and get better.
I thought the biggest difference between this Devils team and previous Devils teams have been depth. The Devils have always been able to run four lines, and all four lines were able to produce most years. I know they did lose Parise, and that was a huge loss. But what happened on the third and fourth line this year?
Like I said, I think it's the youth. I'll give an example. The Rangers, you know, this year when they came into the season, they thought, all right, Chris Kreider will come and from the playoffs that he had, and he'll elevate his game up, and he'll replace what the Rangers lost in the trade to Nash. And I think the Devils were expecting that, too, from guys like Henrique and Zajac and some of the younger guys there, Steven Gionta. And they just didn't really get that, I don't think. And I also think their feistiness, you know, when sometimes you have a fourth line that's a luxury, like the Devils did last year against the Rangers, their fourth line was just incredible. Getting energy every night. When you don't have that depth, like I agree with you, you lose that third or fourth line, and then suddenly they're asked to play a different role. They're asked to play, you know, you gotta put points on the board. And I think that's kind of what happened, is that they lost that luxury. And like you said, Parise, you lose a guy like that, and all of a sudden the offensive pressure shifts to elsewhere. And there wasn't really any, besides, I think, Clarkson, I guess, there wasn't a lot of secondary scoring going on that team. The drop-off, if you look at the stats, it's Elias, it's Kolchuk, it's Clarkson, and then Henrique had 11 goals. But it wasn't the kind of team that had the kind of depth that they needed.
They seem to be either too old or too young in a lot of places.
So true. And you know, when they acquired Steve Sullivan, I thought, well, there's a guy who brings some energy to the team, but yeah, he's on the you know, he's at the back nine of his career, as they say, you know, there's just a lot of little pieces on those teams that if you have a couple of other guys step up and become stars and kind of elevate their games, you're going to get a more deep team and a place where Steve Sullivan could come in and really contribute.
Yeah,
Charles, I got to ask your opinion of the NFL draft and what your thoughts of with the Giants and the Jets and just in general some of the moves that were made. What stood out to you?
Well, I thought the Giants draft was one of those drafts where you look at who they get and you hear a lot of questions. You hear, oh, Hankins, he's got these struggles, weight problems, Pugh, his arms are too short and more. He's you know, not a practice player. He needs to get better strength. He needs his head right. And Nassib and I think that as somebody who's followed the Giants since he was born, I guess you'd say, you know that their front office, to trust their front office, and I think that's the Giants draft in a nutshell. As you say, at the 19th pick, they're taking the guy Pugh. Great. He could be a guard. He could shift to the outside. He could play one of the tackle spots. And I trust them. I inherently say I don't think short arms is a huge deal. I think if a guy is struggles in other techniques, and you're going to see him drop for that reason. But I thought it was a good pick. I think Hankins, it's a little bit of a luxury to have a guy like that, a run stopper, out of the second round. And, you know, there was some talk he would be a first-rounder last year, and he's since dropped. So, again, they always like value. Every time they take a pick, it's value. And with Moore out of A&M, you look at him and you say, great, he was going to be a first-round pick last year. He needs to add strength. Great, put him in the weight room, give him a diet of 50 million calories and see how he does with that, and put him into that lineup. And what they do is they take guys and they put him in the locker room, basically lifts him up. They say, Justin Tuck, make him do the extra work. And they do. And I thought that was pretty successful. And getting Ryan Nassib, I thought, was terrific because they haven't addressed the future at quarterback. And while Eli Manning is always durable, I think you always want to start thinking a little bit in the future. And getting a guy who is supposed to be either a first-rounder or a second-rounder in the fourth round to trade up for him, that was, I thought, a really shrewd move by the front office.
My biggest question about the Hankins draft, the pick of Hankins, was if they were looking to upgrade at defensive tackle, which they pretty much have a logjam this year. I know they signed Colin Jenkins and Mike Patterson. Sharif Floyd was available in the first round, who a lot of people picked to go top five. Why would they then go with someone like Hankins in the second round if they passed on Floyd in the first?
It's a great question. I think the Giants have their own – I think this is true for a lot of teams. You talk about their board, and I think they just had Hankins rated a certain way. Well, also remember that, you know, at that point in the second round, you know, Floyd was about to be taken later on. I think they had their eye on upgrading the offensive line first. I think that was sort of their priority. Defensive tackle, yes, they are deep with guys like Jenkins aboard and Patterson aboard. The ultimate thing for me is Floyd wasn't going to drop them in the second round. I think they were looking, again, like I said, the offensive line first. And then they thought, then it's value at that point. A lot of surprises for me with the Giants are they never, ever, ever take a linebacker unless it's later in the round. And they didn't take one in this draft, which makes you wonder what secret they have about bringing linebackers in as free agents and not through the draft.
Are you enjoying this time of year with between the baseball starting up and basketball playoffs and hockey getting ready to go into the playoffs and, you know, obviously football now officially right around the corner?
Well, I'm sorry, I missed that. Did you just say, what was that?
Is this not like in your mind as a sports writer, the best time of year with the NBA playoffs, the NHL going into its playoffs, football getting going, and baseball in full swing?
It's either this or October. I think October is a great time too, because you start to get the starts of those seasons. You get the end of the baseball season. You're right smack dab in the middle of the NFL season, and so it's as a sports writer also you're juggling a lot of things. I mean, I had to watch obviously the Ranger game while they were on the road, and I didn't get to watch the first round of the draft. But I'm sitting there toggling, you know, in between periods, looking at the draft and saying, all right, I think I know what's going on here. But you don't get Mel Kiper in your ear on the first day. It's wild, I think, for sports writers and fans alike.
It's funny because that was the exact opposite. I was at the draft. I was at Radio City the whole weekend, and I was following on Twitter the result of what was going on with the Ranger game I had people calling me, telling me what happened, that the Rangers scored with 3 minutes left to tie it up, and then they won in overtime. And was it any surprise that it was Ryan Callahan that scored the goal that sent them into the playoffs?
Nope. Captain Cali is he just puts that team on his back, and he's really – it's amazing to see when you put a C on a guy that they fill it out, that they don't just take it and be a leader. They show why they're a leader, and he's just – it's amazing to see him, Callahan, just go from being, you know, a hard-nosed player who can score to he really has some puck handling skills and an eye for, you know, that shot that went past Ellis. I mean, there was a lot of room for him, but that's a tough shot to hit off the post. And it's just been incredible to watch him this year.
Hey, Charles, I have to ask this question too. Now that we're getting into, you know, the latter part, you know, they're not going to have as much good food this year at the Giants practice facility. You know, this time of year, like, it starts picking up now that this year they're going to have training camp back at the center over in the East Rutherford. It's you know, it's not going to be like Albany food. This is going to be like the in-house food like they had 2 years ago. I don't know if you covered training camp 2 years ago when they had camped out at the Timex Center, but the food's going to be different, man. This is a different animal compared to Albany.
It really is. I actually spent a day up in Albany, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. It might have been 2 years ago, and it was just so much fun to watch the locals and the fans really get into it. They're all really diehards, the ones who show up, and it's kind of a party. I think it's the same way that you know, Chicago, where they go, the Bears go, that it's the same way. And these little towns, some of the places where other teams have their training camps, it's really great to watch those towns come alive and people come alive. And also, I think the players treat it kind of like summer camp in a way. You know, they're shuffling around. It's a very relaxed atmosphere. You know, they're off to the you know, to eat lunch in the giant cafeteria. And yeah, it'll be a little bit different, I think. And yeah, the Timex Center is great. Don't get me wrong. It's just, yeah, it Albany is a real kick in the pants, I guess you'd say.
It's funny because I live in East Rutherford, but on a yearly basis, I probably spent more time up in Albany than I did in East Rutherford when they were there 2 years ago during the lockout season.
Yeah, and it's easier, I think, for fans to go, assuming they're allowed in, to go see their team, you know, in New Jersey. But yeah, the Albany experience is one that I hope fans get to experience at some point again.
All right, Charles, final minute here. Are you are we now at the point now where the NHL has fully recovered from the lockout from earlier this year? Are they back now officially? Is the interest level, do you feel, is back where it should be?
I think so. And then there were reports this week that the NHL hadn't taken a hit at all. And I think that's the dirty secret that the owners and I think probably somewhat the players kind of knew, is that, yeah, they could miss half the season and they wouldn't take it because they knew the hardcore fans would come back. And I think that's exactly what happened, is they know where their bread is buttered, I guess you'd say, but they know that there's this hardcore hockey fandom that will always follow them, that will come back, that won't turn their backs on the game, that the casual fans might come back a little bit over the years, but that, yeah, they're not going to get a hit from hardcore. Let's say, you know, half the Rangers fans not coming to the Garden. It's just not going to work that way. They're too passionate. So I'd say, yes, the NHL had a great year, and the playoffs, I'm sure, are going to be just as intense, given the fact that there was this great battle right at the end there for both conferences. You know, you saw four or five teams really jockeying for position in the last couple of weeks, and that's exactly what they wanted. So I thought it was, you know, yeah, to answer your question, absolutely. They are definitely back.
Charles, one more from me. Who do you see coming out of the East and the West and meeting in the Stanley Cup Finals this year?
That's rough. Putting me on the spot. No, I appreciate it. I'll tell you, I obviously, as a Rangers writer, I'd love to see them come out. I got to see if they come out. But if I'm going to be impartial, which is what I should be, I'm going to say out of the East, I'm going to go maybe with the either the Maple Leafs or the Canadiens. We were talking about them. There's just something about those two teams. And it would be great for the game, by the way, to have one of those two come out. So
yeah.
I'll flip a coin and I'll say that Carey Price catches fire and the Montreal Canadiens come out of the East just because. I don't know if Pittsburgh can sustain a playoff series or a playoff run. I think they should, but I'm going to just throw it out there. You know, the number one seeds in playoffs these days, they don't do too hot, so I'll say they won't come out of there. And I'm going to stick with what I had from earlier in the season or right before the season. I said the St. Louis Blues were going to come out of the West, and I'm just going to pick them, even though I almost can guarantee that the Los Angeles Kings could beat them in the first round, but I'm still going to stick with it because why not?
I actually picked the Blues last week, too, to come out of the West. So we're on the same page.
Good.
Charles, we appreciate you coming on for a few minutes today. We know we always love to have you. And through the NHL playoffs, we're going to, as long as you have a few free minutes to join us and you're not, killing it on the computer, we would love to have you on throughout the playoffs.
Anytime, you guys. It was always a pleasure. Thanks for everything.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charles.
Bye.
The great Charles Curtis joining us here from NJ.com. Covers the New York
Rangers. Well-rounded.
Very, very well-rounded. You know, we obviously we're going to jump into the NBA with him because he doesn't really do much with the NBA. But, Ryan, we're about 4 minutes left here. It's time for Sound Off. Jose was on earlier. We made the announcement starting in 2 weeks that Jose and I are expanding Real Sports Talk Radio to Friday night. And this is going to be your baby. I'll be up behind the glass, and it's going to be your bag on Sunday mornings. So, you know, treat it well.
I'm excited.
It's going to be a good thing. And let's go with Sound Off. Go for it. You're up first.
My Sound Off is going to be about the New York Jets. Cue the clown music. can the Jets bring in any more quarterbacks? I mean, for a team to have six quarterbacks on a roster is just absolutely perplexing. What I would really love to know is what their plans are for Mark Sanchez. Are they going to give him the opportunity to win the job from Geno Smith? Is it his job right now? Or will he not be with the team come June 1st? Also, their second pick of the first round was a 4-3 defensive tackle, a one-gap penetrator who they're now going to have add weight and play nose, something he's never done in his life. Sheldon Richardson is a very good player, just not the right fit for the team. And the overall draft of the Jets seems that it's also spelling the end for Rex Ryan. I think John Idzik is drafting a team that he wants to build after Rex Ryan is done. So I apologize, Rex, but I think your days in New York are numbered just like Mark Sanchez's.
Be careful. He might put a tattoo of Revis in a Buccaneers jersey on his other arm. My sign-off is quite simple. Today will probably mark the end of a legacy in Boston with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. It's playing their last games in a Celtic uniform. Whether they retire or go to other teams, Paul Pierce is a quiet reminder of something that's really good in sports, and that's the loyalty of wanting to stay with one team. If you ask Paul Pierce if he would take pay cuts to stay with the Celtics, yes, he wants to retire in one uniform. But we are sadly reminded in the world of sports, it's not about loyalty, it's about the almighty dollar. GMs don't do what's best for the player. They do what's best for the organization and their fan base. If we had more guys like Paul Pierce, this is coming from a Nets fan, probably the NBA would be a much, much, much different place to play in. For Randy Zellia, Ryan Stern, Real Sports Talk Radio, every Sunday from 11 to 12:30. Check us out on Facebook as well as on Twitter and backsportspage.com. Ryan, talk to you next week.
You got it, Randy.